Live from the Lincoln Douglas Building in downtown Quincy, the only local show taking a principled stand on the issues of the day.
This is how it happens. It's the natural process of things.
The view of the entrenched is predictable, but it's also erroneous.
With Sean Seacrease.
We have an addiction in this country, not only to government welfare and government handouts, but more fundamentally, to other people's money.
And Quaid.
Again, you're dancing with government.
This is the Morning Meeting.
You cannot continue to advocate for status quo when status quo has run the ship aground.
On Talk Radio 930, WTAD.
She's still in the spoonful of sugar to help the medicine go downstage. Is Illinois also in that stage?
No.
Talk about that. No, it's just the forecast just calls for pain.
Yes.
As we've said in Illinois. Much more on that coming up in just about half an hour. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, joins us here on the Morning Meeting. Quaid, this was disturbing. A panel of business leaders got together in Springfield yesterday. I believe this was put on by the Springfield Journal Register, the paper there. And they asked him, what do you think it's going to take to get the state turned around? And in unison, the eight leaders said, this is hard to contemplate, but we think it's going to take a major catastrophe.
A major catastrophe.
Mm-hmm. We'll talk with Ben Yount about that and what that may look like.
What constitutes a major catastrophe? I will tell you that a major catastrophe for somebody who works in government in Springfield or somebody who works in the SEIU is different than a major catastrophe for a taxpayer.
Mm-hmm. This is something that is looming and hanging over the state. It's essentially the fiscal sword of Damocles at this point, if you'll allow me to get just a little bit highbrow here. Social services are being affected. Yesterday, we talked about Galapagos Charter School announcing that they are shutting down due to lack of state funding. They had other problems as well, but the final straw there was the instability of the state budget and that funding, mm-hmm. and what will be next. I think that's the game now. What will be next? There is an outside chance that some people are holding on to that the state could get something done by July 1, which is the new fiscal year.
That's what the governor is hoping for, but Speaker Madigan said that he would meet, if I can get the quote right, meet continuously on Wednesdays.
They canceled the last two,
right?
Which is fine because they had nothing to do, so why bring him in, pay him overtime from the already broke state coffers?
Promised to meet every Wednesday in a continuous session and has canceled the last two.
That doesn't mean they're going to get anything done.
It doesn't mean they're going to get anything, but you're not going to get anything done if you're not trying. Nothing can get done if you're not there, can it?
Well, see, now you're violating your own directive of breathing life into something that should be. We've referenced it before on the show. It's the quote from Mark Twain, no man's liberty is safe while the legislature is in session.
Well, there's that. And while the legislature is not in session and we move closer to catastrophe, maybe we move closer to getting something done. But the lawn's not going to get mowed if you're not behind the mower.
That's right. Meanwhile, Governor sat for a series of extensive interviews yesterday. I want to get into this more with Ben, but I want to grab the poll quote right now. He's not used this phrase before, and he rolled it out yesterday, he being Governor Bruce Rauner. He called Illinois a collectivist economy. That is a phrase that's associated with your communism, socialism type government structures.
Mm-hmm.
It's a collectivist economy, he said.
That is an interesting quote. I haven't seen that one thrown around so far today. The one that I saw thrown around, actually a couple thrown around today, and we'll get to this with Ben, is that we're entering an absolute crisis phase, and it's tragic. That one's being, you know, pushed right now. Collectivism? Ah, boy. That's, to me, there's a lot more weight that goes with that statement.
And you know it's bad when part of the archipelago, the area that was once in Illinois called Forgottonia, here, Adams Pike, this whole area, is headlining some news. Last night, we referenced this on the show yesterday, the Mount Sterling City Council voted to keep the water on to the prison there, despite the fact that they are owed over $250,000 in back payments by the state. The state did make a payment yesterday a $55,000 payment. That was for the water of November 2015.
Yeah, and we've got the story up at WT80.com mm-hmm. if you want to click over and read the story. I believe NMJ put that story up, or Scott, one of the two of them put that story up a little bit earlier. Not surprising.
Our version of the Associated Press.
Right. Not surprising that they decided to keep the water on. And the reasoning behind it, I thought, was kind of sound as well. Because as soon as you turn the water off, the problems complicate immensely. I mean, exponentially. Mm-hmm. And then you start saying, well, where can we take these prisoners that there is water?
And what happens to our local jobs?
And there you go. So surprising that they kept the water.
No, not surprised at all. The surprise would have been Mount Sterling extends middle finger to Illinois, turns off water at mm-hmm, prison. Mm-hmm. That would have been a huge upset, so to speak, if you were voting on that. But no, not surprised at all that they kept that water on. All right, that's a couple of things we're keeping our eye on this morning. More coming up with Ben Yount in just a bit here on the morning meeting. A divided Senate yesterday rejected rival plans to, quote, bolster the federal background check system and a move toward blocking other proposed curbs on guns. You have a liberal left that is you know, decrying this move yesterday by the U.S. Senate.
Yeah, what was the statement? The Republicans have decided now to sell guns to ISIS.
Yes, that was the leap to conclusions square that they landed on yesterday. Here's what I'll bring this down to. Anything can be a weapon. A 2,000-pound vehicle, when driven by someone without the skills or someone who is lacking those skills because of inebriation, drug use, distracted driving, that vehicle is a weapon.
Mm-hmm.
You use that vehicle to cause an accident, to injure people. Vehicle-on-vehicle accidents, unfortunately, do result in fatalities. We don't run around further restricting driver's licenses. You can use anything as a weapon. A rifle is more convenient than a rock, but we killed each other with rocks long before we had invented gunpowder and rifles.
Yeah, we've got a long tradition.
The tendency towards violence is in the human spirit, is in the human condition.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not trying to get too esoteric here, but anything becomes a weapon. And the legislation that is looking to hold gun manufacturers accountable for crimes carried out with their product is asinine and unbelievable. This is essentially saying, you know what? I went to the grocery store, got a bunch of stuff, went home, didn't do a very good job of cooking it up, and gave myself food poisoning, and now Pillsbury's responsible.
That's right. Well,
I mean, it's just asinine.
We talked about this type of stuff with Travis Aiken last week and every other Wednesday. Mm-hmm. It's not exactly the same, but it's not far off. We just haven't, instead of putting it in front of a courtroom, we've taken it to Capitol Hill.
I think I mentioned my favorite snarky send-up of this, which was a T-shirt that I saw that referenced the Harry Potter series of books in universe. And it simply said, wands don't kill wizards. Mm. Wizards kill wizards.
Yeah, I've seen that.
So that's a good one. And keep that in mind. It doesn't, the gun has no morality. It only does what you do with it. It takes a human trigger, man, woman, to make it a killing machine aimed at other citizens, civilians, targets, in order to be effective. So keep that in mind. When you hear this hysteria going on, the problem is the people who are making the decisions, not the device that they are using to carry it out.
I'll quote Ronald Reagan. We must reject the idea that every time a law is broken, society is guilty rather than the lawbreaker. It's time to restore the American precept that each individual is accountable for his actions.
Coming up next on the morning meeting, we take a look at the presidential presumed nominees. We talked about big changes for one yesterday. Are there more to come? And has an entire party decided that their system is outdated? Next on the morning meeting.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD. We'll be right back.
Do you even need the setup anymore? It's such a universal joke. If you could just look at somebody and go, they're out of you. I think most people would understand what you just said to them. It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. Sean Seacrest, Quaid, official morning meeting guest countdown clock coming up in 16 minutes. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, joins us here on the morning meeting. I'm a creature of habit, and I have decried my lack of attention to detail to you occasionally, Quaid, when I forget to wear a belt. If I wear something, if I wear shorts or pants that have belt loops, I loathe forgetting that. All right. I made a conscious decision today because of something that I have to do shortly after the show, not to wear the watch today. And now I'm missing it. You know? So now I've got my phone on here. I'm good. I think we are synced. We are both synced to the Navy Master Clock in San Diego.
Do you usually I'm trying to think. You usually just have your phone out.
I've been I've been trying to
Do you usually see him wearing a watch?
Be put together a little bit more. I've been doing this. Well, you guys haven't known. I've been doing this consciously for like the last 3 months.
Sorry.
And you were just railing on someone who didn't notice when you got glasses.
Yeah, I know. I know.
The watch is a little bit more subtle thing.
Irony, I become the.
It's one of those things that you're used to doing it, and then you decide not to do it for whatever reason. Like, I just didn't want to
take
do it
the
today.
Time to well, no, put it on it your
sits,
wrist.
It sits next to all of my other things, like on my dresser. I've got it,
sure.
My phone, my money clip, my keys.
You got the little caddy there, and all the stuff's in it. Sure.
Yeah. So I said, nope, we're doing that today. I don't need to take it off and worry about losing it. We're just going to go without. And now I'm missing it.
What are you doing? Like some hard labor? You're going to be digging post holes? What are you doing that you don't want to have a watch on? Don't get mad. You started this.
Disc golf. But we're going to try to beat the rain with like a lunchtime round.
Okay.
So I'm going to hopefully get my 7 tag back because I'm playing the guy who took it from me last week. So, yeah. Yeah, should be good.
You know, you could offer him your watch and probably get it back.
No, that wet watch that I have isn't his style.
Oh.
We don't have to go into that. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog. This was all to point out the fact that I had to look at a different timepiece to get the official guest countdown clock, and now we're way out here on a sidebar, a spur to the railroad that actually just dead ends in people hating what we're talking about right now. So let's get back to the topic, shall we? Donald Trump, after firing / parting ways with campaign manager Corey Lewandowski, has come out and said, I'm going to run a, quote, different kind of campaign. May have his cabinet picks ready to go by the GOP convention. I think there's no surprise after a primary is wrapped up, no matter what side of the aisle you are on, you always run a little bit more to the middle. Primary is very much about satisfying the base on either side of the aisle, making sure you wrap up that base, which, let's be honest, is further to the left or right, just by the definition of it being intra-party, than when you go to a general. In a general, you have to attract more people who sit closer to the middle of the aisle and even appeal to some people who will cross over who may be unhappy with their party's candidate. So by definition, you are accomplishing different goals. And one of the things that I get frustrated with are pundits, talking heads who want to decry, oh, that candidate, he said, she said this during the primary, and then they moderated their stance, and they're not just out for blood anymore. You're actually, think about it this way. You go to an amusement park, you ride two different rides. It's not the same experience on each ride, and it's not designed to be. These are designed to be different campaigns. You're trying to win one election, and then you're trying to win an election in a different race.
But they don't have the same sign in front of each ride that says, this ride is this. And then you get on it and it's different.
Well, that's true. That's true. But you don't want a candidate to betray who they are, but it takes a completely different strategy. It's essentially being asked to win a game of duck pins and then being asked to win a game of bowling. I mean, it looks the same, but it's not really.
And that's where a skilled politician, a skilled orator can pull something like this off. People who kind of fumble their way through it are going to get called out on it a lot sooner.
And what I'm essentially doing here is telling the base, relax. Your candidate has been chosen by you through a series of primaries, caucuses, and so forth. And now, in order to win the next step, they have to change presentation, tone, style, because they're trying to win a different race.
I totally get that. But
we should be smart enough to understand that.
You have to understand that, especially as, and I'm going to say Republicans, but as conservative voters, we're more than a little skittish. How many times have we elected somebody, sent them to wherever, and then had them moderate, vacillate on positions that they said they were rock solid on when standing in front of us?
Mm-hmm.
The voter is it's like a quarterback who's taken a lot of shots standing in the pocket. We got happy feet as voters right now.
You're right, we do.
So that's kind of where I think, you know, some of the squawking is coming from, is that we want somebody who's going to say what they mean and go do what they say. Not just say getting elected mm-hmm. is the end all be all, because at that point in time you don't know.
Well, and that's the difference, though. I don't want anyone to change a core value, a core principle, a core agenda, but you have to be adult enough to understand that it might be presented in a different light.
Sure, and I get that. And again, it comes back, I think, to the skill of the particular candidate in how they're able to effectively pull off that dance.
Meanwhile, swing state polls see Clinton pulling ahead in Florida and tied with Trump in Ohio. I bring this up because the feeling in some quarters is that the Trump campaign, as it was constituted for the primary run, wasn't necessarily set up to leverage its capabilities that well in the general. So they may be changing some pieces on the game board. This could be the move away from Lewandowski to Manafort and all those things sort of in the campaign. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see, with Trump seemingly losing ground in the latest polls in two important states for the presidency, Florida and Ohio.
Well,
you know, you start losing traction there, and it's a long uphill battle.
And you also have the story. I mean, today New York Times has a story that Trump is way, way behind in available funds. When you talk about fundraising, Hillary mm-hmm. Clinton is miles ahead of where Donald Trump is right now. Now, he'll say, well, I could self-fund, and that, but I'd rather not. But right now,
because in the primary, he said he was going to be entirely self-funded.
Yeah, and then we got to the general. He said, if you want to donate, then feel free to donate. And I totally get
different
that.
Different financial ballgame there.
But right now, you know, based on how you were in the primary, you're way behind. And you might have to mm-hmm. prime it with your own money, at least to get it going.
Well, and what have we sort of ruefully praised about the Democrat apparatus for the last decade plus? And that has been their leveraging of especially online algorithms, targeted appeals, and using technology to do a lot of the heavy lifting when it comes to the small donation fronts.
Okay, sure.
Campaigns that you hear about, the high profile so-and-so hotel magnate gave $100,000, or Missouri politics, Rex Sinkfeld gave X amount of dollars. Campaigns are often made on the back of how many times they can get you or I to donate $25.
Sure.
And if you do a lot of that accurately with great algorithms and automation and targeting, that gives you a huge leg up.
But I don't think that what we're talking about now is the DNC outpacing Donald Trump and the RNC. We're talking about Hillary.
Right, but that apparatus, that technology, has been leveraged by the Democrats
that
so much more effectively.
Yes, is in place, and they can leverage it better. But as we saw in the primary, the DNC doesn't have a whole lot of money. Hillary had to float the DNC for a while. So she's the one who's ahead of the game right now as far as mm-hmm. The fundraising goes. I wouldn't necessarily say the DNC is. Apparatus aside, that's a different thing. It's an adjacent thing. But Donald Trump needs to get going.
Yeah, he does. Just a couple minutes from now, Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us here on The Morning Meeting. I found this interesting, too. This is sort of a dovetails in with what we were just talking about. The Democratic Party's superdelegate system. Talked about the superdelegates being party officials and those sorts of people. They get a vote. Those votes were equal to delegates obtained in states for primaries, caucuses, what have you, is now under fire after Bernie Sanders' repeated call for a political revolution. As primary season wraps up, state Democrat parties across the country are looking to overhaul that system and weaken or delete the superdelegate role. I thought this was interesting.
It is interesting.
I realize now we're getting into the apparatus of how a party goes about finding its nominee, but what apparatus you use says a lot about how your party is structured, how the leadership wants it run, and so forth. So I think this is interesting.
It is, and the cynic in me says, okay, well, what do they have off to the side that they can replace it with that will still give them ultimate control?
Sure. You have to wonder about that as well. Hologram Bill out on tour, I don't know, next to Tupac?
That's okay.
Could be something that they're looking into. All right, coming up this morning on The Morning Meeting, Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, he's ahead next on WTAD.
Where we go, others will follow.
That's who we are.
Even if it's not the best idea. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
This is Dennis Miller, and you're listening to The Morning Meeting. Here on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.
Flexing down on his superhero power once again, he is the Thread Killer, Quade. Sean St. Chris with you this morning on The Morning Meeting. Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning. Ben, are you out rolling around getting all the free Doritos Locos Tacos from Taco Bell after their NBA Finals promotion today? Is that what you're up early doing?
The last time I got a bunch of Dorito Loco Tacos, my doctor just looked at me and said, why? Then if you need help, just let us know. There are support groups for that. There's no need to do it slowly with Doritos Locos Tacos. Although I have to say, if you want to talk about the spark of human ingenuity, just what it is that makes people different from animals, you can keep your Sistine Chapel. You can keep your symphonies. Give me the Doritos Locos Tacos. If anything shows just how creative we as a species can be, it is someone saying, here is a chip that tastes like something. I want to cram beef into it and eat it in my car as I drive to the island of sadness. Good for us. Yay for the Doritos Loco Taco.
Ben Yount, Illinois Watchdog, with us this morning here on The Morning Meeting. Ben, Governor Rauner broke out a new phrase yesterday. He sat for several extensive interviews, and the headline coming out from it was he referring to Illinois as a collectivist economy. This is something you often hear associated with dictatorships, with socialism, with all of your communisms, all of your collectivist isms. He's essentially trying to tell Illinois, look, you've been run like a socialist enterprise for far so long that we have a collectivist economy. We need to return, in his mind, to a free market economy. This is, I think, more than just ratcheting up the wordplay here.
It is not just simply an economic discussion, because while, you know, it is tough to say that Venezuela and the state of Illinois share much of anything. I mean, we can still go to the store and buy toilet paper. I think that what the governor is getting at is something we've talked about here, some I talk about, some I'm sure you talk about. We have a government in Springfield, and I heard some of the comments that he made. He talked about Speaker Madigan would be a dictator if he could be. Mm-hmm. But what we have here in Illinois is we have a government for the government, by the government, of the government, as opposed to a government of the people, by the people, for the people. Chicago tomorrow is going to vote on a sick time ordinance. Then all of a sudden, every small business in the state is going to be required to offer paid sick leave. They're also going to, you know, possibly vote on Uber regulations. When you look at why these things are happening, it is not just because it feels good. The Democrats who have run the state of Illinois for years have a vision of an economy, and part of it is 1976. They think everybody should be in a union and go and take big rocks and make little rocks and slide down the back of the brontosaurus at the end of the day. But some of it is they just really government benefits government, and when you look at how there is a thumb of government on the economy, whether it is this regulation or that regulation, this law, that rule. I mean, for God's sakes, how many times do we have to have a conversation about a minimum wage increase in the state? when you look at how the government in Illinois, in Chicago, impacts the economy, I think that's where the governor is getting this idea of a collective economy, that lawmakers, they're not interested in running grocery stores. They're just interested in regulating grocery stores to behave as they want. And that's a real problem because, again, you know, I had the conversation with the guys from AERCO. I mean, they're based there out in Quincy a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, listen, we got 1,500 employees in the state. We'll never have 1,501. And that's the problem. When the government gets in the way of the economy, you've got issues.
Ben Yown, our guest this morning on The Morning Meeting. All right, Ben, is there a way that we can, like, flip this over? If I can borrow wrestling parlance, perform a reversal on Springfield? Governor Rauner says we're entering a crisis phase. Can we use this crisis phase to give more power back to the voting people?
Well, you never let a good crisis go to waste. I mean,
yeah.
If there's one thing we've learned in this state, it is never let the crisis go to waste. Listen, people still don't believe that there's a problem with government. 90% of the people of the state of Illinois, their day is not impacted. Mount Sterling had to vote last night to keep floating the state of Illinois its water bill. Today is the day that everybody else, if you don't pay your water bill in Mount Sterling, today is the day that you don't have any water, unless you're the state of Illinois. Because the state made it very clear, if you turn off our water, we're going to close your prison and you're going to lose those jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so can we reverse it? I think that what is happening is people are starting to realize they are paying so much for government. They're paying so much in sales taxes, property taxes, income taxes. And when schools close, and schools are going to close at some point this year, they'll open in August. But if they make it a full year, it'll be amazing. If they make it next year, I'll eat my hat. But what's going to happen is, and this is what has to happen, right? People have to realize that what we've been paying for all of these years is not government services. We've been paying for paychecks and pensions and perks. And that's what hasn't been reformed. You see, that's the thing. People would say, okay, you know what? I understand. I wouldn't want to be a prison guard. I understand you're making $100,000 a year. But when you're making 100 and you're not going to change that, and then your pension is 75% of that, but after a couple of years you're making more in retirement, thank God, compounding COLA, 3% every year. That's what really drives people mad. And when my kids or your kids have to miss school, or when the roads have potholes forever because the cities don't have money, that's what it's going to take. The people are going to have to realize that they've been paying so much for all of this government, and they're not getting anything for it. And that when the switch flips, my God, look out. Pitchforks and torches, and if you are within a year of retirement from your public job, man, you better pray that this doesn't flip before, because people have no sympathy. There will be no tax increase to bail out floundering local pensions. I can guarantee you, not in this state, not with this mood, not with these voters.
We already saw the first school fall yesterday. Galapagos Charter School up in the Humboldt Park neighborhood announced that they were just flat closing it down. Now, they had other issues along the way, but the CEO said, look, the final straw was that the state funding just wasn't going to be there. Is this just the first domino? Now that the first one has fallen, Ben, do you anticipate more of these happening?
I think there are 15 school districts. And don't forget, Chicago is I think, one of these 15. There are 15 school districts out of the 860 across the state that say they just can't do it. They cannot open in August. Now, I've talked with the superintendent at QPS, and he says, yeah, we can open in August, and we can pay for, you know, 70-something days out of what they have in the bank. And they'll go and borrow, and they'll do that. Most superintendents are dedicated to going the distance this year. But, you know, there are some. I think it was someplace up by the Quad Cities. They met last night, or maybe they're meeting tonight, to discuss what happens if they have to end the school year early. I got a senior in high school. State of Illinois says that boy has to take 4 years of gym. It is a requirement. But if the school closes down because they don't have any money in December, what happens? Does he graduate? Well, he hasn't fulfilled the state's requirement for gym class. So this opens up a lot of interesting questions that I don't think anybody really has the answer to yet. And this is the first domino. You're not going to see a bunch of them fall down right now, but I'll tell you, at the current timeline, because this is sort of the plan, right? I mean, we did this in 2011. Okay, we don't have a budget now. They're not going to come back in a session tomorrow. Lawmakers aren't going to come back. They may come back next Wednesday, which would be the last Wednesday before the end of the fiscal year. Mm-hmm. Fiscal year ends July 1st. Not a big deal. We don't have a budget. Still don't need a budget. July 15th, that's the first payroll. We still don't know if the courts are going to say continue to pay these workers or not. Then you get to August. August is that first school aid payment. If there's no first school aid payment, you're going to see some pain. You're going to see some schools, some of those 15, just close. But most schools can make it to the end of the year. Well, the idea is, okay, if you go past August, then you've got the November election. Once you get past November, then you got to get to January so that the 60-vote threshold changes. I don't know that schools can make it to January. I mean, I really don't know that most of the 800-something schools in this state can make it to January. I guarantee you that there are more than half that are sweating having to come back from January. Yeah, lawmakers may pass a budget January 3rd or 4th or 5th, but schools come back January, what, 9th? That's cutting it real close. And when that happens, when parents are stuck to deal with their own children in the winter, then you're going to start to see anger. When high school basketball can't finish, you are going to start to see some anger.
There is a small cult of true believers that actually think the state will get something done by July 1 to start the new fiscal year. I am not one of those people. I would imagine you are not either. What is it that's giving these people hope, or is it just the fact that they want to believe anything at this point?
I think that they want to believe. I really do, because we sat here, what, 360-something days ago? I sat here on your show last year at this time and said they're not getting a budget till January, and everybody just they'll get something by then, and I didn't think we would come all the way full circle. Here we are, the end of June. We did not have a budget last year. Now 90% of the state government is operating via court order, and the governor signed the education budget. But there's nothing magical about July 1st. What is the incentive for lawmakers to do this early? There is nothing that is going to force them, and there's no benefit to them getting it done now. What, they're going to be responsible all of a sudden? Anybody who thinks that this does not end in January is either not in tune with the reality of the Capitol or I don't want to say willfully ignorant, but I think just beyond optimistic. They are hoping so much that the bad stuff in the world doesn't really exist that they're closing their eyes to the reality. Lawmakers may, and I mean may, you know, we still have all sorts of, well, what happens if the speaker loses seats, if he gains seats? I mean, there are so many variables that we may not even get a budget come January. The goal here is to break Bruce Rauner, and nothing breaks a governor more than a state in crisis. I could see another scenario where we're sitting here 365 days from now having this exact same conversation.
Wow. I'm going to bring it back to what you were saying earlier, Ben, and that is government for government. And unless something occurs within the next couple of months that makes November not as important as what's going on across the state, November will still be the thing. And then if the paradigm changes after the election, then you've got a whole reassessing of the whole situation, which, again, is government for government instead of the people driving the bus. So, yay, Illinois.
Yeah, well, this is the thing that people have to understand. And I do not mean this in any way, shape, or form to be insulting to the speaker, because it's just a fact. Mike Madigan's singular goal, the only thing that he cares about in Springfield, is maintaining a Democratic majority in the Illinois House of Representatives. State's successful? Cool. State fails? Meh. He's still got his Democratic majority. His only focus in this November, in every November, is to make sure that he has a Democratic majority. Supermajority, I think he would like, but majority he has to have. He has to have at least 60 Democrats. That is his only focus. And you're exactly right, that when that's the focus, schools be damned, higher education be damned, reform be damned, he wants to maintain his grip on power, because he knows that if he doesn't have that grip on power, he can't do any of these other things. And that's That's the entire conversation. No one cares if you have a child with a severe developmental disability. I'm sorry, state government doesn't care about you. No one cares if your kid misses out on that scholarship at the end of the year because your school only had 130 days of funding and not 188. Everyone will feel bad for you. Oh, I'm really sorry. Yeah, government in Illinois, it kind of sucks. But no one cares enough to change it, because this all gets back to, got to maintain your power majority in Springfield. You got to be able to maintain your power base among your campaign donors. And listen, we could sit here and do 20 minutes on how Republicans across the state have gotten into bed with business and you know, they abandoned some of their ideological fights years ago. But the problem that we have in Illinois all comes back to, if you want to know the single genesis of every problem in the state, for years it has been a government of the government, by the government, for the government, as opposed to, as Abraham Lincoln so eloquently put it, a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And there are 13 million people in the state of Illinois. We are going to crash and burn the fifth largest state in the union to benefit 350,000 people who collect the state pension. And if that is not the saddest thing we have ever seen, I don't know what is.
I think Ben just drove all of us to the island of sadness.
I am not just the thread killer, my friends. I am the show killer.
Quaid is the thread killer. Quaid is the thread killer. And today you're the happy killer, but that's all right. Sometimes you have to deal with that before you can then come out the other side and experience happiness
because
again.
This is not a fight over a couple of $100 million here, a couple of $100 million there.
Right.
Rob Blagojevich did this in 2006. He held out on a state budget till he got a perk. George Ryan was notorious for negotiating to get pet projects. If this was just simply, well, you know, this guy wants a brand new shiny set of lights for the high school field, fine, easy, done. But this is a fundamental battle, and this is the battle we have to have. There's no way around it. We will either have an Illinois that looks like what Governor Bruce Rauner wants, or we will have an Illinois that looks like what Mike Madigan wants. There is no middle ground. There is no compromise. There is no, okay, well, I'll meet you halfway. We are going to get one or the other. And the unfortunate part is it's going to take probably 4 years. And what is going to be left standing of the state of Illinois when we are done? Because we are going to need a Marshall Plan when this battle is over. We will look like post-war Europe. There will be a few walls standing, but there will be nothing else. I mean, we are at this pain 1 3/4 year into Bruce Rauner's tenure. Imagine what's going to happen if this battle continues for four, and there are more than just a few grumblings at the Capitol that we may never get a full state budget under Bruce Rauner's tenure.
Wow. You mentioned Marshall Plan. That's a half shuffle step towards a Puerto Rican style bailout, Ben.
Listen, you have people in that building just waiting, hoping, because they've got to get some sort of relief. And, you know, this is what happens when you have government for the government. Somebody looks to the next bailout, the next savior, the next government mom or nanny or cop or loan. And when you always have this idea of, I don't worry about it, it's government money. No, it's federal money. It's not real money. No, don't worry about it. It's state money. It's grant money. It's okay. Eventually, somebody runs out of money, and it's to bring it all the way back to the collectivist economy. Eventually, you run out of other people's money, and in Illinois, that's what's happening. And I love this state, but I'm sitting here in the back bedroom of my house in Lincoln, Illinois, and I'm doing three jobs. I can do this from the back bedroom of my house in Pinellas County, Florida, or North Texas, or the Phoenix area just as easily. They got internet and air conditioning now all over the place. I don't have to stay in Illinois. And there are a lot of people who are in the same boat. And when property taxes rise just a little bit more, that could be the straw that breaks the back. And all of a sudden, you know, what, how long is the commute to Hannibal? How long is the commute over the river and to some of the bedroom communities there in Missouri? And you get a great view as you watch the state of Illinois burn and sink under the ground.
Ben, got me all choked up now. Goodness. Illinois Watchdog with us here this morning on the morning meeting. All right, Ben, we'll get your real estate agent help you start looking for places here outside of the state before next week. That's going to wrap it for Ben. More morning meeting coming up next. Thank you, Ben.
Have fun, guys.
Giving conservatives a voice in the tri-states.
I mean, this stuff moves people.
It's the morning meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD. WTAD.
It was late and might have been a copious amount of gin and tonics involved, so I'll wait until later for that. Quaid, if you're wondering why everyone loves IPAs but you think they're way too bitter, you should stop drinking them while you listen to weird Norwegian death metal.
What?
There's new research out that says the music that you listen to while you drink beer, and Quaid actually loves IPAs. I'm just using him as the crux for the story. The music that you listen to while you drink your beer actually affects how it tastes. Say you're listening to like a Disney soundtrack. The beer will taste sweeter because the music evokes that emotion in you. You're listening to something that has an underlying sense of outrage or anger, then it evokes that in you, and so your drinks will taste more bitter.
But what if you aren't a fan of like Disney music while you're drinking?
Well, if you evokes,
apparently, Josh, what you need to do if you want it to taste sweet, you're gonna have to Disney up.
I don't think I'm gonna listen to "It's a Small World" while
you seem more of a Little Mermaid enthusiast.
No,
beer all of a sudden tastes crazy.
Lion King, go home now. Okay,
tastes like seafood. Apparently, research has proven a connection between evocative music and what it evokes in you and the actual palate, your palate,
okay, so
of what you're experiencing.
To Josh's point, then, if he doesn't hear Disney music is sweet, hence the beer won't be sweet.
Yeah, if Disney music makes you angry, Josh, then it'll taste more bitter because music that evokes strong, like, anger, rage,
it's not that makes me upset. It's just that there's a lot of stuff, like, Disney's kind of been ruined for me at this point. You know what I mean?
No. So, what do you mean it's been ruined for you? What do you?
I'll explain later. It's kind of funny.
Oh,
we may get to know a little bit more about producer Josh.
I'll get the camera ready for the after show segment.
All right, that'll do it for us. Just be conscious of what you're listening to and how it's actually changing your mood. We're always a picker up right here on the morning meeting.
Morning meeting adjourned. Join us again tomorrow for the best talk in the tri-states. The Morning Meeting on Talk Radio 930 WTAD.